P-minus 59. Ford McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. From inside Emma's home office, but without her being present, Leisha prepared to engage in a similar process to the one he had conducted the previous night when relaying someone else's thoughts directly to her. On that occasion, Leisha had been passing on thoughts he gathered via an energetically costly deep dive into the minds of the intruders responsible for Phil Norris's death. This time, just minutes after the equally tragic murder of another McCarthy family ally in the shape of Masoud Demir, Leisha was set to pass on a revelation that would come as at least as much of a surprise to him as it would to his human friends. The only two of those friends present, at Sacco's somewhat surprising request, were Dan and Tara. It seemed evident to all three that the news was going to be something related to the gate, since they alone had crossed it, and since that distinction was really all that made Tara a more natural choice as one of a limited number of initial recipients of breaking news than her older sister Emma. Sacco certainly didn't care about official titles enough to prioritize Tara's ICA position as assistant planetary liaison over Emma's position in everyone's mind, human or alien, as someone uniquely capable of cutting through complex issues and getting right to the heart of them to find a solution while most others were still digesting the broader picture. The fact that the ICA chairman himself, William Godfrey, had been left out of Sacco's requested group highlighted his indifference to titles more than anything else, and to Godfrey's credit, he had been as understanding as Emma about the unusualness of their tight-knit group splintering like it just had. Godfrey's lack of complaint hadn't gone unnoticed by Clark, who surprised himself by realizing that he was actually growing somewhat fond of Godfrey, having previously been shocked enough to find himself merely tolerating the chairman's once abrasive presence without complaint. "Do you know yet?" Tara asked, unable to break the habit of unnecessarily speaking aloud to Leisha, as she usually did, along with others, in times of high stress. "Do you know what this is about?"
"No," the alien replied. "But I'm going to completely open up my conversation with Sacco, like he wants me to, so that you can both hear everything exactly as I do. You'll know when he's talking, and you'll know when I'm talking. I don't have to explain that. It'll be clear."
Dan and Tara both nodded, as sure of this as was their extraterrestrial conduit. They would never truly understand any aspects of the telepathy that made this kind of communication possible, but when it came to being in conversation with two aliens at once, or even listening to two conversing with each other, as was going to be the case here, the complexity of certain parts of this process became even more apparent than was normally the case. Explaining their experiences of telepathy to anyone unaccustomed would have been all but impossible. And indeed, had proven so time and again when more people were brought into the fold. From the likes of Henry McCarthy to the more recently sworn-in members of the club, like Chip Petrovich, everyone had experienced their own aha moment when an alien voice, in most cases Leisha's but sometimes Sacco's, first entered their mind. What had surprised Dan most of all when he first spoke to the messengers in Lolo National Forest was that he heard their thoughts in his own mental accent, almost as though they were his own, but never with any doubt that they weren't. Nevertheless, in some way that none of the humans were capable of articulating, it was always clear whose telepathically delivered thoughts were whose during multi-individual conversations, if conversation itself was an appropriate term for the silent exchange of ideas that occurred when one uplifted or patchworking individual mentally connected with another. Access to the telepathy-granting uplift patches or even the table and cable method once used at the United Nations hadn't been opened up to anyone not deemed trustworthy or essential by the messengers or the McCarthys, which meant that no linguists or neurologists who may have been able to express these phenomena with suitably precise vocabulary had been able to test it all out for themselves in order to write any peer-reviewed analysis or anything of the sort. Dan had always trusted that the messenger's abilities and technologies would be studied in an open but responsible manner by scientists from around the world, and the absence of such studies over the past few years had been a near constant source of frustration and one of the key reasons that he had ultimately, if somewhat reluctantly, supported Godfrey's breakaway from the UN's stifling bureaucracy in favor of an independent agency based in Buenos Aires. In time, Dan McCarthy still dearly hoped to see a world in which the principles of mutually beneficial information exchange and scientific cooperation were sovereign over the kinds of political and economic considerations that he saw as having constrained humanity for too long. With his good friend Billy Kendrick having isolated himself without any meaningful supplies on a newly discovered planet, with two close allies dead, and with utter chaos having brought misery to both Earth and New Kerguelen, all within a remarkable 24-hour period, Dan McCarthy was currently thinking about 1,000 things more urgent than abstract scientific cooperation. If such things had been in his mind, he would also have been thinking about what kind of cooperative relationship both humanity and the messengers might one day develop with the remarkable Smalls of Sanctuary, whose very existence should have been the biggest news of all, but who had practically slipped from his mind since his return to Earth, given the influx of information and problems that had come his way, even in that short time. Despite the immense familiarity Dan and Tara had with telepathic communication, both by now having been exposed to it so frequently for a prolonged period, the sudden sound in their minds of thoughts that were clearly Sacco's, thoughts traveling instantaneously to them across an unknown distance via the scarcely understood gateway that linked New Kerguelen to Earth, momentarily disoriented each of them. "Whoa," Tara said, her eyes darting around the room and her hands instinctively extending out in front of her as though she had just been dropped into the room from elsewhere and was uneasily trying to get her bearings. She felt foolish as these involuntary responses first kicked in, but this fleeting embarrassment faded when her darting eyes caught Dan doing more or less exactly the same thing.
"Why does it feel so weird?"
"It's definitely weirder than normal," Dan said. All Sacco had said so far was a simple greeting, but their shared feeling was a strong one. "Maybe because we can hear him but not see him? Usually if we're hearing them both, we'd be seeing them both, and then you kind of instinctively look at the one who you know is talking. This time we're just looking at Leisha, but the voice is going to keep changing between them." Leisha, disinterested in this meta-level discussion, interjected.
"Perhaps I should simply talk to Sacco and then relay the conversation," he suggested.
I want them to hear it directly," Sacco cut in. More than any amount of consideration or analysis, this interruption reaffirmed both the effortless ease with which the humans could distinguish between their alien conversation partners and also the fact that they couldn't, for the lives of them, understand quite how those automatic distinctions could be made.
"As you wish," Leisha replied. "By all means, Sacco, please begin in haste."
Rather perfunctorily, but without skipping any major details, Sacco then explained to the listening trio that he had been present in the Great Shelter when an unexpected visitor came his way. The mention of Boone, known to all three, was one that immediately had them wondering how New Kerguelen's planetary historian, of all people, might have found himself in a position to alert Sacco of anything related to the gate. Indeed, the clear importance of Boone to this tale had them all second-guessing their natural collective assumption that the news would be about the gate at all. After all, Boone's interests were as grounded as they came, in a very literal sense. His work and passion lay in discovering and preserving the once-lost artifacts and history of his people and their planet. As far as Leisha knew, Boone had no access to specialist equipment used for monitoring the gate, or indeed access to anyone who did, so his presence at the beginning of Sacco's rundown truly was a major surprise. The next name Sacco communicated to the Earth-based trio, on the other hand, brought a sudden look of realization to Leisha's face, even as it clearly confounded Dan and Tara. They didn't have any time or need to ask the obvious question, "Who's Kajeel?" as Sacco's explanation continued rapidly and the context filled in that particular blank right away.
"Kajeel has been conducting an analysis of the mothership's flyover data," Sacco said. "He did so in accordance with standard procedures, but with more urgency and focus than usual, given that this data had the potential to reveal so much about a previously unknown world, while Leisha was seemingly too busy to share anything about it."
No one had to read between the words to know that Sacco was irked by the rapidity of Leisha's return to Earth, particularly given the difficulties facing New Kerguelen, but the latter neither felt a need to defend his desire to get Dan and Tara home safely as quickly as he could, nor believed this would have been the right time to do so, even if he had.
In any case, Sacco went on, I'll get right to it. After careful analysis, we can confirm that verified readings within the computational logs undeniably point to two instances.
Instances of what? Leisha cut in. He wasn't being overly impatient in doing so, but was rather filling the mental silence of an entirely uncharacteristic hesitation on the part of his faraway and normally succinct partner. There was never any lag in the messenger's distant communicational uplinks. When their uplink worked, as it always did unless one of the two was in a shielded location, it worked flawlessly. Here, Sacco had trailed off in a very human manner, as though either taking a moment to decide how best to phrase the most important line of his rundown, or perhaps even reconsidering whether this was the best time and manner to share it at all. Still, Sacco was silent.
Sacco?
Leisha said, holding a hand to his head as though trying to focus on strengthening his connection. He then looked at the humans again.
I still sense him, but he's not talking. Something is definitely wrong.